This is the Quality News Network.
Northern Iraq's top U.S. commander says despite a current drop in violence across the country as a whole, al-Qaeda has shifted their focus to several key cities in the now more violent north. Army Major General Mark Hertling says militants have pushed north and east and have grown increasingly proficient in carrying out roadside bomb attacks. A series of sectarian weekend bombings killed 17 Iraqis, wounding 48. One attack in Baghdad targeted a newspaper editor and finance ministry official. In addition, a suicide attack in Bakuba in the volatile Diyala province killed 3 U.S. soldiers and 4 Iraqi children yesterday as the troops handed out holiday gifts to a crowd of Iraqi youngsters. A federal grand jury subpoenaed several security guards with Blackwater USA as part of a newly opened investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi citizens in September. That's according to ABC News. The Justice Department has declined to comment, and a Blackwater spokeswoman said she could not confirm any probe. The current death toll in Bangladesh could go much higher in the aftermath of the country's deadliest cyclone in more than a decade. More than 3,500 people are dead. Thousands more are missing. Teams from international aid organizations are coordinating with military troops to deliver food, water, and clothing to villagers whose homes are now flattened rubble. The White House Chief Advisor on Homeland Security and Terrorism has resigned. Fran Townsend serving in the position for more than 4 years. Martial law continues across Pakistan as President General Pervez Musharraf rejects Western demands to restore democratic rule before national elections early next year. In Cambodia, the former Khmer Rouge head of state arrested to stand trial for genocide, the fifth high official of Pol Pot to be charged. More than 2 million people died during the killing fields regime. Former Republican Governor Jim Gilmore will seek the U.S. Senate seat currently held by John Warner, who is retiring. Gilmore may face another governor, Democrat Mark Warner, but he has to win the primary first before doing that. And former Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick turning himself into authorities to begin serving up to 18 months in prison. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? 2/3 are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
The Japanese whaling fleet today steamed out of harbor on its way to hunt humpback whales in Antarctica, despite warnings from Western allies. Japan says it will kill about 1,000 whales. The country is using a loophole in the global moratorium that allows lethal research. Whale meat is a prized menu item in Japan. Activists report up to 80% of electronics recycled by Americans are then sent overseas to fuel a global trade that ultimately endangers both the environment and poverty-stricken workers. E-waste is often brokered by Chinese-owned companies to countries in Asia and Africa. Food banks and soup kitchens nationwide are reporting an unprecedented scarcity of donations. Many groups say they're canceling Thanksgiving dinners and food baskets, more working families in need than ever before. America's number two home improvement retailer, Lowe's, posting a 10% decline in quarterly earnings and lowering its annual forecast. Food company J.M. Smucker posting higher than expected quarterly profits, boosted by price hikes and the acquisition of Eagle Condensed Milk. Price of gas jumping 13 cents a gallon in the past 2 weeks, that's according to the Lundberg Survey. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow plunging 218 points to close at 12,958, NASDAQ down 44, S&P 500 down 25. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
We're experiencing a moment of technical difficulty. Please stand by.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Test.
And we're back. Good evening, America, and good morning, world. And welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 74 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Sorry for the technical snafu there at the beginning. It is yet unexplained. We did a reconnect to the studio, and everything is fine now, and as it should be. Anyway, it's the mysteries of the Internet and streaming audio. What can I tell you? Today is Monday, November 19th. So if you're listening on a Monday, that's November the 19th at about 9:11 p.m., you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are welcome to phone in and speak to our guest, who I will be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of the guests, as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room and to the Head-On Radio Network main site, where you can find about all of the other progressive programming on the Head-On Radio Network. There are links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music on the show. Last week was a very interesting week on the Head-On Radio Network and on Strictly Confidential. We had a number of wonderful guests last week, Dennis Dyson from the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, Peter Toscano and Christine Bake from Beyond X Gay, Jeremy Davis from the Balerico Project. We had Dr. Gates, who is a senior research fellow at the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation, Law, and Public Policy. And then we had Denny Meyer, who's with American Affairs and Veterans, American Veterans for Equal Rights and Gay Military Times. And if you'll notice, during all of those days last week, we did not have a music guest. So this week we're going to make up for that. We try to have at least one music guest per week. This week what we're going to do is we have a music guest scheduled tonight who I'm very excited to have. It is Mr. D.C. LaRue. Mr. LaRue was referred to us by our West Coast dance music consultant, Glenn Rivera, and we're glad to have him on the show. And tomorrow night we'll have Stan Harrison, who is a New York-based rock and jazz saxophonist, who's played with Duran Duran and Ernest Cole and David Bowie and others. We had a slow start, so we're going to go directly to the guest. D.C. LaRue, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you. Can you hear me over there?
Yes, sir. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Yeah, there's a little bit of a problem initially, huh? There's 11 minutes of nothing.
Yes, there was a problem there to begin with. For some reason, we'll probably figure it out tomorrow, the link that links myself here in Tallahassee to the studio in West Virginia looked like a successful connection, and I could hear the studio, but apparently they couldn't hear me. We did a reconnect. I do streaming audio from the studio here in Tallahassee to West Virginia rather than going through a standard phone line, and sometimes the indicators say everything's fine, but in reality, they are not. So that was threw me off my stride there for a minute. D.C., I was going to do an introduction for you. I was going to indicate that you were born in Connecticut and that you studied graphic design and entered the record industry through the back door, in a way, as a album sleeve designer for John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen and Ten Wheel Drive, Jim Croce, Janis Ian. That is a very, very clever way to get in the music industry.
Well, it was also my way of paying the rent as well, because, you know, I moved to New York City from art school in Connecticut, and you move to the city, you gotta get an apartment, you gotta pay the rent while you're running around to all the A&R people with the songs and trying to get a record deal. So it was what I loved to do. It was what I was doing at the time, and I was fortunate enough to get a good job and in the music industry, working for a lot of wonderful, famous people, and having a very exciting time with my art direction, graphic design work, as well as looking for a record deal. And then when I found the record deal, you know, then I started making the records, and I stopped doing the art direction for a period of time. But it was like anybody else, you know. Instead of becoming a waiter or something like that, I was an art director.
Well, it was very clever, and apparently you were quite good at it. You received Paul Revere Awards, and that's no simple thing to do. And, you know, working with John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen.
I loved, you know, and when I stopped recording in the early 80s, I had to, you know, people said, well, you have to redefine yourself. And I said, no, really. I mean, it was a difficult transition period for me going from recording and performing and that whole thing back to, you know, being a civilian, so to speak. But I really didn't have to redefine myself too much because I had always done art direction and design. And when I, when my whole deal with Casablanca Records and the whole disco thing fell, you know, bottomed out, I, well, once again, you have to go back and you have to pay the rent. And I was fortunate enough to get a job with Warner Brothers Music in the print division. And I went right back into what I had been doing before I made Cathedral. So it was an easy transition on one level, but it was very difficult psychologically. I mean, I was a mess. It was very difficult to going to being a recording celebrity to going back and being a civilian, you know. So a rough transition to make. I see a lot of people, I was fortunate that I was able to do it. A lot of people don't do it. You know, they end up drug addicts or hopeless alcoholics or suicidal or whatever, you know. But,
Cathedral's.
Anybody's life.
Cathedral's, though, was huge. Like, that happened in.
I sympathize with these kids who, especially with these rappers who, you know, they make a CD and it drops double platinum or triple platinum, and the second CD is only platinum, and the third CD, they're back on the block selling crack, you know, and people don't have any, they pretty much don't have regard for these kids, and I sympathize with them because it's very difficult to live one life and then have to, you know, like, come down to a different kind of reality when the success is no longer working for you and spent all your money. And, oh, please, it's a depressing time. But let's move on. So I was lucky. I was fortunate. I got a job right away when I moved to the city. And then when I stopped recording, I just picked up where I left off.
Well, the track Cathedrals came out in 76, and apparently, well, as I know and you know and anybody who was DJing around that time knows, it was huge. In fact, Cashbox referred to Cathedrals is to disco what Blue Suede Shoes was to rock and dance halls. Cathedrals is an amazing track. Could you tell us about the background on that? Was that your very first attempt?
Well, no, I had had I had knocked around the music business for a while, and I had done several other recordings, pop recordings, and I came up with Cathedrals. I had done a disco tune, kind of like a tongue-in-cheek disco tune as DC the Roof for Claridge Records, called Moving Closer, and it wasn't an incredibly successful hit, but I love the record, and if anybody can find it, they're lucky, but it's really a terrific little tune. And then Cathedral was very, you know, I was living in New York City, and it's just, you know, I was going to the discos, and I was dancing, you know, and I was a part of that whole revolution and everything with music, and I was going to all the underground clubs, and I remember I was at the David Mancuso's loft on 99 Prince Street here in 1975, and I was with Steve DiAcristo and Vince Aletti, and I remember that it really was like a religious kind of communal experience with the drugs and the music and the whole thing. And I can remember Steve DiAcristo threw his hands up in the air and he said, "Oh, discos are the cathedrals of now," you know, and I said, "Oh my goodness, what a good idea, what a good idea for a concept album." And I was, I had a fixation on the Donna Summer recording, Love to Love You Baby, and I said, and this is a great, I felt it was a great venue for, you know, these long kind of conceptual albums that could make a statement and on, you know. And I felt that I went home and I just came up with the idea of Cathedrals from that one moment at the loft, and I felt it was pretty, I could talk about what was happening, and I felt very free to talk about the sexuality and about the music and about the nightlife and about the drugs and about the whole thing. So that's what I did, you know, and put it together. I took it around. Like, it wasn't my, to answer your question, it wasn't my first stab at making records. It really wasn't. But it was the right recording for the right time, it was the right moment, and everything seemed to work, and it was saying all the right things, and it was, when the record came out, it was amazing. It was just an immediate success in the clubs, which was where it was supposed to be, a su- Yes, I never made a top 40 commercial record. In retrospect, I should have, I guess, you know, but I never did. I never went into the studio to make one of those little cutesy pootsy shake your booty things like Casey and the Sunshine Band or Village People, or even Donna Summer. I mean, I was never A&R'd in that. I mean, I always went in to make serious musical statements. You know, have to forgive me. And like I said, it was very successful, and it was a landmark record, and it changed a lot of music. It changed. Very progressive record for its time.
And well, I understand
lyrically and musically, and with the bass line and with the rhythms and the whole thing. I remember back in the day that, you know, I could not get radio play with it because of the lyric, and because I thought the lyric was too sexually outrageous. And I listen to lyrics now, you know, and you get little Kim singing "Eat My Pussy Right." And I said, well, you know, I can't believe, you know, that, and I listened to the lyrics of the Cathedrals, I can't believe that they wouldn't play it, but they didn't, you know, especially on U.S. radio. I got airplay in Europe, but they didn't understand what I was saying because it was all in English, and, you know, they spoke French or Italian or whatever.
When it did hit in mid-76, apparently it went to a top 10 dance record on the entire world. And what's this about it being re-released in England and remixed as if it's a new record? What's going on with that?
Well, yeah, that's great stuff. I mean, they had and this is really an amazing... I think it speaks a lot for the track. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, a producer called Bobby Blanco and Mickey Moto, they sampled Cathedrals, and they reconstructed, they re-EQ'd it, and added some bottom and a little bit of a rap thing, and they called it 3 a.m., and they released it, and it was a huge hit. It was a huge hit. But all it is Cathedrals. It's all it is dance, there's the track Cathedrals. So much so that my music publishing company got me a writer's rate on it. It's not a sample rate. I get paid as a writer and a performer because it's pretty much Cathedrals. And it's pretty much, it was a huge hit, and it's a 35-year-old record. You know, it sounds a little bit better because they re-EQ'd it and they added some bottom, but in essence, it's a record that's 35 years old. Then there's another DJ in England, his name is Greg Wilson, and he did an edit of Cathedrals, once again, one of these, a very creative edit of the instrumental track, and they released it on a CD called Deep Down and Discofied, which has been in the English top 50 now for like 7 months. And that has, once again, and that's a big hit. Now, it's unbelievable. That's a 35-year-old record. Now, it's re-edited and very creatively done. But in essence, it's Cathedrals. It's a 35-year-old record. So that being said, the Defected Records over there in England, I mean, there's the guy over there, he said, listen, he said, this record is it's such an amazing record that we would like. So they've gone to EMI, who has the original master tapes, and they've licensed the original analog master, and they're making they're doing digital copies of it. And they've got three or four disc jockeys, and they're going in and they're going to remix the record and re-release it as if it were a brand new record, because everybody, and it's wild, because I don't think this has ever been done in the history of the annals of history of music. It's just a really wild, wonderful, fortunate thing that's happened with the record. It's amazing. And it only proves to me that it really was ahead of its time. It really was a groundbreaking record. When the record can come back after 35 years and be received like it was a brand new record, it's just... it's really out of sight. I mean, it's very unique. What can I say?
Well, as our friend Glenn Rivera in California points out, it seems that some of the younger DJs are beginning to do their research and rediscover at least people like yourselves and some of the early pioneers. Was this the particular track that you took to Tom Moulton that Tom Moulton just didn't get?
No, that's an interesting story. I think I told that to Glenn. I was in California, and I had done Cathedrals and the T-Dance and Confessions. And the guy who was producing me at the time for Casablanca, his name was Bob Espy, and we were locking horns on a lot of creative stuff. I didn't get along with him very well. And so I said, well, gee, maybe I can find somebody else to produce me. So I had made a couple of calls, once to Bob Crewe, who had done Hollywood Hot and a couple of other things with Monty Rock III and Get Dancing or whatever. And then I had called up Tom Moulton, and he was out there doing some work. And I said, Tom, I'm looking for somebody to produce my next album, which turned out to be Forces of the Night, which is my least favorite album. I mean, for whatever reason. And I said to Tom, I said, you know, I'm looking for somebody to produce me. And he said to me, he said, well, DC, he said, I love your music. He said, no disrespect, he said, I'm a disco producer. And he said, I produce disco records. And he said, I'll be damned if I know what kind of music you make. He said, because I certainly wouldn't qualify as disco. And he said, I would be the least appropriate man to come in and produce your next album. And I thought that was, you know, I said, oh, okay. You know, so, but because I all along, if you really listen to my music, it was never disco as, it never fell into that, you know, like formula kind of disco stuff. It was always different in one way or the other, so it really couldn't be bagged as you know, just pure disco stuff, you know. So that was what Tom said. Tom didn't know. But so eventually I ended up making Forces of the Night with Bob Estes, and I was really unhappy with it. It didn't turn out the way I heard it in my head. At that point in time, his ego was overwhelmingly difficult and out of control. He had just done the Donna Summer stuff, Once Upon a Time, and then he had done the thing Last Dance, and he had won an Academy Award with that. And then he had produced Barbra Streisand's Enough Is Enough, Main Event, and then he did Enough Is Enough, and you couldn't talk to him anymore. And when I went in to the studio to do my recording, I pretty much knew what I wanted to happen. I knew what I wanted to hear as an end result. I couldn't talk to him anymore. I mean, he was just like a little Nazi Hitler person, and he wouldn't take direction, he wouldn't take my advice. And when I remember on one of the tracks, Hot Jungle Jumps and Voodoo Rhythm, we had done a great rhythm track, and I wanted to keep it very sparse and jungle-like. And he added these horns and these strings and these throats and this, and I said, Bob, this is just like the wrong record. This is not what I hear in my head. And it didn't matter. He just did it. He went in and did what he wanted anyway. And in the final analysis, that Hot Jungle Jumps was a big hit. And a lot of people love it. You know, but every time I hear it, I realize it's not the record that I wanted it to be. And I'm very unhappy with it still after all these years. But go on.
Well, Hot Jungle Drums and Voodoo Rhythms, I believe, is a part of the Forces of the Night LP, if I'm not mistaken. That's right?
Yeah, that's right. Right.
And you say it's not your favorite album. Is that really confined to just Hot Jungle Drums? Because I have to be perfectly honest with you. I think the track, the tracks as they are assembled, Forces of the Night, that particular cut is just to die for. I just really like it.
Well, you know what? I'm glad. I'm glad that you love it. You know, what can I say? It's like, it's not my favorite. But I think that, you know, I've gotten used to it. To be honest, I went for a long time doing other things with my life, and I hadn't really sat down to listen to any of my old recordings for about 10 years, believe it or not. And just recently, I put up a website, a fan site, www.dclarue.org. And it's like a little nostalgia website for my fans out there. And you can purchase my albums, you know, if you want to go to the website, you want to hear some of the stuff that I did. It's all been digitally remastered, and you can purchase all the albums, the 5 albums and the compilations and whatever. And so when the digital remastering was done, I brought everything home to my living room here, and I listened to I listened to these recordings for the first time in a long time, because it was my job to listen to them. I had always been a boy. I wasn't one to live in the past, and I didn't care, and I didn't want to hear them. And it's like that was behind me. That was then. This is now. And so I sat down and I listened to all the albums, all 5 albums. from beginning to end, and in sequence as I recorded them. And Peter, I'll tell you something. I remember really hating Forces of the Night, and as I listened to it a couple of months ago, I don't hate it so much. And it's funny because I was listening to it and I said, why did I hate this so much? You know, because it's not bad. It wasn't bad. And I'll tell you, there's a tune on the second side called Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which I said, gee, this really does sound nice. You know, it's better than I remember it. And so it does have its saving grace. So, you know, I guess you're not so far off by like looking at it.
Well, I think one of the things I liked about Forces of the Night so much was the sudden kick in of the Latin influence. I thought that was just it was genius.
Well, thank you. Well, the whole concept of the album is On Comes the Forces of the Night, and that Latin thing was about a hooker who had a white boyfriend who just she wanted to get rid of while she was turning a trick, you know, and it was a Spanish hooker, you know, so it was like and I love that transition too, where that drum comes in, boom, with the rice on the drums and the Latin horn thing starts. It's a nice change.
Yes, it is.
And like I said, I remember disliking it a lot more than I dislike. I think now it has its merits. Some things are, and I know the part that you're talking about, because when I was listening to it a couple of months ago, when I was got all these digital remasters. Oh, that's nice. You know, that segue is really nice because they go boom, dun, da, 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 da. It really is.
Well, I have a question. It's based on something written by Saturday Night Forever, the story of disco. They're remarking on your track, I'll Wake Up Screaming in the Middle of the Night, and says that's the message is about anxiety attacks. Okay, I get that. I can follow that. But then it says that Forces of the Night is a mega paranoia cut, and I listen to it and I don't get it. What is the paranoia?
No,
there,
you know, that, once again, it's all subjective, and I didn't get that either, you know. But you know, it's like it's whatever it means to you. I found that you don't try to analyze these things. If you listen to it and hear one thing, and if Juicy, who's the guy who wrote that book, listens to it and hears another thing, you know, everybody has the right to their own interpretation of the song. It's like with Cathedrals, if you were gay, you heard it and you interpreted that lyric as a gay lyric. And very much so, and that's granted. But that being said, if it was a big straight hit as well in the underground club, and if you were straight, you heard it and you interpreted it as a heterosexual lyric. It was whatever you wanted to hear in it. I always perceived it as the musical front runner to that Diane Keaton film, Looking for Mr. Goodbar. You know, mm-hmm. Because it was about sexuality at that time in the club, and you could be a female looking for a one night stand with a guy. You could be a guy looking for a one-night stand with a female. You could be a female looking for a female, or a male looking for a male. It was whatever you were and how you perceived the lyric. And that paranoia thing, I didn't understand that either about the Forces of the Night track. But if he saw it that way, then. But I Wake Up Screaming is quite a paranoid song. It really is. You know, it's like. So he was right about that, and we both understand that conceptually, but I didn't get what he was talking about either, but I'm not going to argue with him, you know. It's however he...
Well, we should... I was just going to say we should go back to Cathedrals, I believe, because many of our listeners are perhaps haven't heard it. We have a large number of straight listeners in addition to our LGBT audience who we inherit the straight listeners from Bob Kincaid's show, which runs just prior to this, and we're glad to have them. They're sympathetic to the gay folks, but they don't necessarily understand us completely. That's one of the purposes of the show, is to burst those stereotypes. And we have a large number of LGBT folks who join us at 9 p.m. And I suspect many of them don't recall it off the top of their heads. There's another influence I've read about regarding Cathedrals, and that was you had just broken up with a girlfriend at the time, and you're a little bit miffed at the club scene. Is that true?
Well, I, you know, with my sexuality, I mean, I don't want to get too heavy into it, but my sexuality is pretty much the individual, and I've had relationships with women and men, and at the time I was experiencing a very bad thing with this girl Roxy, who was very promiscuous. She worked at Atlantic Records, and the sexuality, my sexuality was years ago. I used to be very facetious and say it was trisexual. I would try anything sexual at least three times, you know. I don't like to be locked into any one thing, because it's really the individual. It has always, in my life, it has always been the individual. And whether it's the individual male or the individual female and the situation, you know, I mean, I'm just that way. I mean, and I've never felt that I would have to, that I had to define myself as any one thing. When I was in high school, I had a steady girlfriend and a steady boyfriend in the same high school, and it never bothered me for a minute, you know, it never did, and I never thought about it. I never went through that whole pang of anxiety or self analysis or whatever. It just seemed so natural, and it just that's how I've always lived my life. You know?
Well, you know, that falls right in line with some of our other bisexual listeners, that it is about the person. And I think you summed that up very well.
Peter, I don't want to go to my sex life now because it's real dull. But even if something comes along now, it's still about the individual, you know, and the connection you make with the human being. And it's just always been that way for me, you know. It really has been. And my partners have been that way too. My sexual partners have been. You know, I always say all my boyfriends have girlfriends and babies, and all my girlfriends have girlfriends and boyfriends, and, you know, but it's always been like that in my life. You know, it's never been one. I've never been locked into any one sexual thing. I think my music lyrically reflects that. You know, if you listen carefully, you know, I was, during those years, I mean, I was so honest about my emotions and about how I perceive things and about my sexuality. And it was no bullshit. It was no holds barred. And I really gave everything. I put everything on the line, and I said everything I was feeling. And if you listen to the lyrics of my songs, you can see it, you know? And if you hear bisexuality there, because it was there. And I mean, there was one song called, Dancing with Strangers was a song about me and May Pang, and it happened to be a woman, but then there are other songs that reflect my male attraction, you know. So it's and I think that's, I'm happy that there's a tremendous reinterest in my music. It's not just, you know, I've never experienced it like I've experienced it in the last year and a half, 2 years. Over the last 35 years, I'm really honest. I mean, about 10 years ago, Rhino released a whole bunch of disco dance compilations, you know, that included Cathedrals and Overture and this and that. And then the Casablanca box set came out with Let Them Dance. And there was a slight, you know, bleep on the screen for me. There was a slight reinterest, where people were a little bit interested in my stuff. And I saw my airplay royalty with ASCAP go up a little bit, and I saw the Mechanicals from the publishing go up a little bit, but nothing like it's been the last 2 years, Peter, and it's out of nowhere. I think it's because of the internet, and I think there's a real connection there, and I think it's a lot of young people. And one thing I'll share about the website, I'll mention the website again because I'm trying to sell some CDs here. DCLARUE.org. I hope you don't mind me giving it a plug.
No, I certainly don't. And in fact, we are posting it in the chat room.
I get a lot of email. When you come into the website right away, it says, and I answer it all personally, you know, DCLARUE@DCLARUE.org. I get so much fan mail from kids. And this is no disrespect. I get fan mail from people in Barcelona. And at the end, they'll say, there's 22 years old. They're 17 years old. I get fan mail from Brazil, from guys who are 25. You know, and when I put the website up, I was thinking, gee, you know, I'm a bunch of old disco queens, you know, you know, from the 70s, you know, and, you know, tired old disco queens, and they'll be, you know, they're all 100 years old. and I'm not being disrespectful, but you know what I mean. And it turns out that I'm getting these things. I get email from England from these guys in Manchester, and they think 18 years old, 19 years old. And I don't know where it's coming from. And I get lots of fan mail. I get fan mail from Sweden. And I got fan mail from some Siberia. And how these people have gotten so interested in my music and so interested in 35-year-old stuff, you know? It's been an amazing last couple of years. It was an amazing journey here because, you know, and with all my honesty in my heart, I never for a minute ever thought I would see this kind of interest again. I'm just like, there's this thing happening in England with this remastering and the remixing of Cathedrals like it was a new record. I mean, this has never happened.
Well, I think it's well-deserved, and I think what we ought to do, if you don't mind, is break for just a minute, and let's run Cathedrals. The version that I have is not the remastered version from England. I believe this is the original version, and I'm sure the people would love to hear it. And when I came in as the intro to the show, I believe I neglected to give out our telephone numbers if you'd like to call in and talk with myself and D.C. LaRue. By the way, what does D.C. stand for?
David Charles.
David Charles. You'd like to call it a doctor.
David Charles.
David Charles. The telephone number is a toll-free 877, the number 4 head-on. That's 877, the number 4 head-on, which translates into 877-443-2366. Or if you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That number is 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. If you'd rather contact us by email, email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And again, we're about to run the Cathedrals track, which has suddenly been released, remastered and released in England as being, apparently it's huge. This is his first breakthrough, although he apparently had tried to do some others. This is the track that everybody remembers him for. Now, we have lots of other music. This is by no means the only track, but I'd like to run it now. It's called Cathedrals, D.C. LaRue. Thank you. I think our listeners can now understand how DC LeRoux was the first white male ever to hold the number one R&B soul chart position in England. DC, that is an amazing blend of funk and disco. It has the violins. It has the funk rhythms. In fact, our production, the fellow in production says, that's not disco, that's funk. And then the violins, he goes, oh, that's disco. It's such
well,
an eclectic.
What, that's what I was saying earlier. I mean, my music really, it's like Tom Holton said, I don't know what your music is. It's certainly not disco. I don't know what it is. that mix, what is that, the disco net mix?
Actually, that mix was sent to me directly by our friend Glenn Rivera, and I don't have anything
well,
but the name, the title.
I think I've talked to Glenn because I think that's not the mix, or it's not the album mix. I think that's the disco net mix that was done a few years later. That they went in and they remixed for Disconet, one of the, you know, that subscription service.
Oh, sure, I talk about it all the time.
Yeah, because that mix that you've just played, the strings that were taken out of the initial record, the first mix were added to the mix and then they extended the break. It's a pretty good mix, though. I mean, I haven't heard that one in a long time, but that's a very special mix. What can I say? It's not the it's
yes,
not
Disconet
the,
is
it's not the mix
amazing.
That was a big hit.
Yeah. Yes, I've always loved Disconet, and Glenn has an extensive Disconet collection, so it is very likely a Disconet remix. We'll have to check with him on that later. But that is one that came.
That was one of the few authorized remixes, I think, is what you just played.
I see.
It worked though. It was nice. It was good to hear it again. I haven't heard that in a long time.
It was a great track, and I regarding the funk beat to that, I have to point out that. As time went by, you did another track called Indiscreet that a rapper who is the Grandmaster Flash is quoted as saying, it was the first hip-hop break I ever heard, and it started all of the hip-hop and rap beats to come. And that was in 1976.
It was released as a limited edition 12-inch, and then there was a bootleg released on Delight on the B-side of another black disco group, and Delight was a black label, and then that was so successful in the black clubs that it came out on a compilation called The Original Beats and Breaks Volume 1, and it was used, I mean, everybody has sampled those hip-hop beats, from Curtis Blow to Beastie Boys to Puff Daddy to Mary J. Blige, I mean, on and on and on, and it's interesting because this is, you know, there was a disc jockey here in New York City on Hot 97, Red Alert, DJ Red Alert. And I have to watch my battery on my cell phone though. I hope it doesn't go out. We're spending an awful lot of time. I hope it just doesn't go dead. I'm crossing my fingers. If it goes dead, Peter, it means that I haven't got any more juice left in my battery. I didn't think this would go on this long, this interview. But
we can go on forever.
But DJ Red Alert, this is interesting because we're doing a gay, lesbian, whatever show. DJ Red Alert had a beat and break show every Friday when he was on Hot 97. Now, in New York City here, Hot 97 was, and I think it still is, like the number one or number two black hip-hop rap station. And he's a black DJ. And he would play on Friday, an hour from 12 to 1 o'clock, all the original beats and breaks from all those first dance records back in the 70s that evolved, that the hip-hop people used to rap over to create their beats and breaks for, you know, the evolution of what was turning into rap and hip-hop. He would always play Indiscreet. Indiscreet was one of the first four or five records that started that hip hop break thing. It was a landmark record. And I had run into a DJ Red Alert on 125th Street here in Harlem about 4 years ago. And I said to him, I said, and he came over and I said, hi, it's me, DC. And he's, oh, DC, the room, blah, blah, blah. And they were in the middle of Harlem on 125th Street. And this is a true story, and I'm with a friend of mine, and And we're talking, and he said, oh, he said, you know, indiscreet. And I said, I can't thank you enough, I said, because on Friday I could be walking through Washington Square Park here in New York City, and these young black kids have on their radio, and I'm hearing indiscreet. And I said, you're terrific. You play it like every other Friday, and I'm so proud to be included, as, you know, how you feel like an instrumental record in the evolution of hip-hop and rap. And I said, someday I would love to be able to walk down at some hip-hop award ceremony with Mary J. Blige as the grandfather of hip-hop. And he looked at me and he said, what, are you out of your mind? And I said, what do you mean? He said, you're white. And I said, yeah, what? And he said, you're white. And he said, you know, and I hate to say it, he said, but, you know, in the hip-hop community is so anti-white and homophobic. He said, DC, he said, you better get real. He said, you're never going to be acknowledged as a major contributor to hip-hop simply because they're so homophobic and they're so anti-white. And that's coming from his very lips. And I think that it's an interesting comment because the record was picked up because it was bootlegged on a black label, and then it was included in a black compilation of beats and breaks. And everybody assumed that DC the Roo, because it was a black artist. And with all the records and with all that industry has been sampled and used on, all the hip-hop and all the rap records, that you go to a book in on hip-hop and the evolution of hip-hop and the roots of hip-hop, and I'm never acknowledged. Never acknowledged. And Red Alert said to me, don't expect to get acknowledged either. He said, because that's the way it goes, and you're never going to walk down the stage with Mary J. Blige and be acknowledged as any kind of hip-hop contributor, he said, because of what you are. And I think that's a real a statement of reverse discrimination, and I think it's real unfair. So there, I said it.
Well, I'm glad you did say it, and that's what this show is for. Let me point out now that if for any reason we should lose you early because the phone goes dead, may we continue it Wednesday evening? Because there's no guest schedule Wednesday. And D.C., there's so much to talk about. You've been in movies. God knows how many stars you've met. We want to hear the star story. Sharon Redd, for crying out loud.
Star stories. Well, I guess we can always talk about it. Have you got any more questions that you feel are, you know, burning desire questions?
Mostly comments about your music. I would like to run some more tracks. I'm hesitant to run Forces of the Night because it runs 20 minutes, and I don't want to
after we hang up, okay? Because, you know, you can play as much as you want after. Let's not waste the minutes of my battery time on playing my music, because you can always do that after our conversation.
We can always do that later. But if for any reason we lose you, we'd love to have you back Wednesday, if that's possible. We can arrange that tomorrow.
We could talk about it tomorrow. You can email me. I don't think there'd be a problem at all. Not really.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, the thing about Cathedrals is not only it was the first commercially available 12-inch 45 single in the U.S., and I haven't told them this yet, but it was the first 12-inch single to ever be charted on Billboard magazine after.
And everybody, they think they know. The Traveras had a record called Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel, you know? Remember that tune?
Sure.
Okay, well, and everybody assumes that that was the first commercially available 12-inch because it was so much, it was a big commercial hit. I mean, that went, they had a 7-inch 45 and it went top 10 on top 40 radio. Whereas Cathedrals always remained an underground record and it never had a little 45 and it was never edited down to 3 minutes. So people assume that the first commercially available 12-inch was Traveras and Heaven Must Be Missing an Angel, but it wasn't. It was Cathedrals. And I think if Cathedrals had been a bigger hit, they would have been the acknowledgement. And then Cathedrals wasn't enough of a hit, though, and because it did precede Traveras and as a commercial 12-inch. And when it hit the Billboard Top 100 as a 12-inch 45, the people at Billboard didn't know what the hell to do, and they were very confused and scratching their head, and they said, this can't be, because this Top 100 is for 7-inch 45 records, and this is a 12-inch 45 remix, and this is like, it doesn't belong here. And so because of Cathedrals making the Top 100 charts on Billboard as a 12-inch 45, Billboard turned around 2 weeks later and created the dance chart, the 12-inch dance chart. And so Cathedrals went from being in the top 100 as a 12-inch 45 commercially available to, like, top 10 on the dance chart. And they created the whole special dance chart because they didn't know how to handle 12-inch 45s on their top 100 because they didn't feel it belonged there. They didn't feel 12-inch 45s belonged there.
Well, DC, how do you feel about the recording industry and this whole thrust not to let people download? It seems to me that, you know, let, for instance, just before the show, I went over to eBay to look to see. There are like 5 or 10 of your albums there on vinyl, but that's not really what the younger people are looking for. So the only way they're finding your music...
It's an interesting question that you asked, and I, before my battery goes dead, I have to be honest about this, Peter. For the last 5 years, I had there was a free download site called WinMix. It was terrific. I mean, it was, you know, members only, but it was free and limited downloads. And I must have downloaded thousands of songs for nothing. And I'm being very honest. And I didn't think twice about it. I mean, and I have the best personal record collection of every song I've ever desired. And I've downloaded it for nothing. I've burned my own CDs and, you know, and I'm just, I skip around my apartment and I listen to all my favorite tracks. And at the time, it was cool. I mean, I didn't, like I said, I didn't have any misgivings about doing it myself. Now that I have my own website and that you can purchase my CDs on the website, and, of course, you know, I don't make a lot of money, but I get a percentage of the income because, you know, I get my royalties. It's handled by a mail order company, but, and you know what? I mean, just last week I got a young girl who emailed me and said she hears Let Them Dance on Sirius Radio, the disco station there, Strobe, whatever it is.
Sure, I know the station, yeah.
And she wanted to know how she could purchase it. And I emailed her back and I said, well, you can either download it, the album mix on iTunes. And I would get paid for that, Peter. And, or I said, you can go and you can buy, if you want the 12-inch mix, you can go to my website and buy the best of D.C. LaRue, Let Them Dance. And 2 days went by, and then she emailed me back, you know, in her naivete or whatever, or her innocence. And she said, oh, don't worry, she just had downloaded it for nothing on from LimeWire. And, it, you know what, and in as much as I was so guilty years ago of doing that, now I have, you know, now I say, oh, boy, you know, that hurts because, you know, if she had just downloaded it for 99 cents on iTunes, I would have made a few cents. But now I don't make anything. And it's fine. It's a double-edged sword, Peter, because, you know what, it was okay for me to do it with music I wanted, you know, over the years. But now that it comes to my music, you know, I have to stop myself from getting resentment because I say to myself, well, if I did it, it's okay for her to do it. It's all, and all those people who are listening tonight who decide that instead of going to my website and purchasing a CD, they go to LimeWire or something or like, I don't know, there's 4 or 5 of them, and they download it for nothing. Well, I guess God bless them. You know, it's their privilege and it's their right. And if it was good enough for me to do with other people's music, I guess it's good enough for them to do with my music. I mean, what can I say? I mean, I really can't be judgmental. And it's interesting that you asked that question because look at where I am. I'm like right in the middle. I'm like between a rock and a hard place. I mean, how would you feel if you were me?
Well, I have to agree, and I understand that was a lot of work. I mean, when you did that, you were dealing with live bands, were you not? Well, I mean, there were no music machines and drum machines, to the best of my knowledge, back in the day. That all sounded like live violin.
Live music, you're right. You know, there was no synthesizers. Cathedrals is all live. It's all real musicians playing real instruments. You're right.
And so that's a huge expense right there. You were quoted at one point. I can't remember what interview or where I read this that because you were like you were on a site and you were seeing that like 300 people were downloading one song and 600 another, that in another way, you're exposing more people to your music now than ever.
Well, you're right. Where did you get that quote? I'm just wondering. Because you're right. I mean, there's the other, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. I feel a lot of the reinterest in my music is because people have been able to go to these websites. And if you go to, like, I don't know, Swing State LimeWire or something, and you try to download Cathedrals, and there are 337 people in front of you in queue waiting to download it, I could get a terrible resentment that those people are downloading it for nothing. But those are also people who are exposed to the music for the first time, and, you know, and it opens up a whole new audience for me. So I don't know. I don't know what to think. I mean, you know, it's an interesting question to ask me, let me tell you.
And I understand it. Mixed emotions. I have a question, though, about when you were working doing the album sleeves for folks like John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen and Jim Croce, Janis Ian. Did they know, did you tell them that you were hoping to get it? Did they kind of hook you up with people that you were hoping to be a singer?
No,
that's what you really...
I never mentioned it. No, I didn't wear two hats. I worked with them on their project, and then after I got finished working with them on the art direction design stuff, I would go out on my own and try to get the deal. I never asked them for any favors. I don't think it would have been worth it, actually, because, you know, but they have their egos, and they're very much into what they're doing. And Janis and Ian and I are still friends. I mean, after all these years, she's living in Nashville. She's a sweetheart. And, I mean, but that being said, when I had the hit record, for example, Janis and Ian was there at the parties or whatever. I mean, she was really supportive. But she didn't have a clue that I was writing music until the record was out. And I didn't feel it was my place to even talk to her about it, because when I was working for her, it was about her stuff and about her music, and it wasn't about what I was going to do with my music.
Well, I'm wondering about the track called Let Them Dance. Now, I'm not sure which album that's from, but apparently it went to gold status overnight.
What?
Is that true? Let Them Dance. It went to gold overnight various awards.
It was a relatively short time. I think about a week and a half, yeah. But you have to understand that was the most commercially disco. And when it came out, it was so perfect for all the clubs. And I had two previous albums which were very successful. And it was my change from Pyramid Records to Casablanca Records. And Casablanca at the time was the hottest record label, in the world. And everybody was wondering what I was going to do. And it was just the perfect record. And when it came out on Casablanca, everybody just rushed to pick it up and play it. And it was a hit. It was a real legit hit. And as a matter of fact, now, we talk about Cathedrals and the reverence for Cathedrals. And right at this moment, as we speak, the record that's getting more played than anything is Let Them Dance. On internet disco radio, on satellite radio, on European radio, it's Let Them Dance, it's not Cathedrals. So it still holds up as like the big disco tune. And like Hot 97 here, the big disco dance station here. But in any case, but they play Cathedrals. They don't play Cathedrals, they play Let Them Dance. I think it's more generic, it's less perspective, and it's more, you typically synthesize disco. And it was a hit. It was a big hit immediately. I remember, I recorded the record, it was released in Los Angeles. I took a week off to go to Puerto Rico. I came back to New York City. And it had been out. It had been released in New York City. It had been out about 2 days. And that weekend, I went out to the clubs, and there was not one club in this city that wasn't playing Let Them Dance in heavy rotation. It was amazing. I couldn't go anywhere. It had been out 3 days. I couldn't go anywhere in New York City without hearing it. So it was
amazing. Well, the studio is telling me we might be losing your cell connection at this point in time, but I want to get in one last question, and then hopefully we can resume this Wednesday evening, because I'd like you to introduce more of your music. But what is this about a role in Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band? And
it was just a minor cameo role. You should rent the movie. You missed the DVD. At the very end, they have all these people like Frankie Valli and Carol Channing and me and it's a potpourri of all these big stars and at the very end. And it was a lot of fun to do. It was a disaster of a movie, though. I mean, it didn't mean anything, you know, because it was such a bomb. It was like the bomb of the decade. I mean, nobody went to see it. But it was fun to make it. It was fun to be included, you know.
And you've done soundtracks for Thank God It's Friday, which was a huge movie nobody could forget.
Oh, yeah, that was a big hit. Yeah, that was a big hit movie.
You did two songs for that. I think Do You Want the Real Thing? And what was the other one you did?
You Can Always Tell a Lady.
Can Always Tell a Lady. Well, we'll ask you to talk about that Wednesday when we get back to you. And if we can fit it in, I don't know if we can get it in before the phone goes out, but... you were in a film with The Village People, Can't Stop the Music. What did you play?
Can't Stop the Music. Huh?
What was your role in Can't Stop the Music?
Well, it was a cameo role in Neil Bogart's office, the Neil Bogart character in Valerie Prime. And there was a moment in the office where I'm highlighted. They feature me, so it was like, these are just little cameo things, actually. You know, they're not gigantic roles. They're not, supporting roles or anything. But, you know, it was at a time where anybody, you know, they would throw in anybody they could to, you know, to beef up the credits at the end of this movie, what can I say?
Well, I think your history is amazing, and I do want to pick it up again Wednesday. After we close with you this evening, I'm going to go ahead and run Forces of the Night because it's 20 minutes, and you know I can't resist it. I don't want to waste 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'm glad you liked it so much. I'm glad you love it so much. And like I said to you, I hadn't listened to it in 15 years. And when I listened to it about 2 months ago, I said, gee, I don't hate it so much. Gee, I don't dislike that so much, you know. And well, people always say, well, you didn't ask me what my favorite album was, which then most people do. And then when I give them the answer, they're always disappointed. But you know what my favorite one is?
No.
My favorite album is The Tea Dance, believe it or not. I mean, I love that album from beginning to end. You know, as a creative person and as a songwriter and as a record producer and as a singer, you know, you perceive something, you go into the studio and you want to make it like you hear it in your head. I think that's the best way for me to put it. And
Wonderful.
The dance from the beginning to the end is exactly how I perceived it to be in my head when I came up with it conceptually. And I have...
Wonderful.
I listened to it today and I wouldn't change... See, that's the test. I wouldn't change a note. I wouldn't change one thing about that recording. Whereas even with Cathedrals, I would change things. And if, you know, and especially with Forces of the Night, there's a lot of changes I would make. But with Tea Dance, Peter, from beginning to end, it's everything I wanted it to be. And,
well, I'm going to make sure I have Tea Dance for Wednesday evening. Tonight I'm only going to run Forces of the Night and Indiscreet, since we talked about that, and the rapper was saying, like, that's the dope. You know, I'm going to run Forces of the Night and Indiscreet this evening, if that's okay with you, and we'll pick it up Wednesday. Okay. It has been delightful.
Well, email me tomorrow, and let's see what happens, and we'll try to
Absolutely.
Do it Wednesday.
Absolutely. Yes, there's no guest schedule Wednesday, so we're free to roam around anywhere we want to. And I'm so grateful that Glenn put us in touch, and it's been delightful, DC.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, and thank you so much for inviting me to chit-chat. I've enjoyed it myself.
Thank you. And we will see you definitely Wednesday. We'll work it out tomorrow. And good evening to you, sir. And that, my friends, was Mr. D.C. LaRue. Now, D.C. LaRue he's the man that goes all the way back to the very beginning. What I would like to do now, I think, is pretend that it's 10 p.m., and we're going to run the top of the hour news. Never mind that it's 10:17. We're running the top of the hour news just because we can. So this is Peter Godbold going to break. We'll be right back on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network.
Northern Iraq's top U.S. commander says despite a current drop in violence across the country as a whole, al-Qaeda has shifted their focus to several key cities in the now more violent north. Army Major General Mark Hertling says militants have pushed north and east and have grown increasingly proficient in carrying out roadside bomb attacks. A series of sectarian weekend bombings killed 17 Iraqis, wounding 48. One attack in Baghdad targeted a newspaper editor and finance ministry official. In addition, a suicide attack in Bakuba in the volatile Diyala province killed 3 U.S. soldiers and 4 Iraqi children yesterday as the troops handed out holiday gifts to a crowd of Iraqi youngsters. A federal grand jury subpoenaed several security guards with Blackwater USA as part of a newly opened investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi citizens in September. That's according to ABC News. The Justice Department has declined to comment, and a Blackwater spokeswoman said she could not confirm any probe. The current death toll in Bangladesh could go much higher in the aftermath of the country's deadliest cyclone in more than a decade. More than 3,500 people are dead. Thousands more are missing. Teams from international aid organizations are coordinating with military troops to deliver food, water, and clothing to villagers whose homes are now flattened rubble. The White House Chief Advisor on Homeland Security and Terrorism has resigned. Fran Townsend serving in the position for more than 4 years. Martial law continues across Pakistan as President General Pervez Musharraf rejects Western demands to restore democratic rule before national elections early next year. In Cambodia, the former Khmer Rouge head of state arrested to stand trial for genocide, the fifth high official of Pol Pot to be charged. More than 2 million people died during the killing fields regime. Former Republican Governor Jim Gilmore will seek the U.S. Senate seat currently held by John Warner, who is retiring. Gilmore may face another governor, Democrat Mark Warner, but he has to win the primary first before doing that. And former Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick turning himself into authorities to begin serving up to 18 months in prison. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
The Japanese whaling fleet today steamed out of harbor on its way to hunt humpback whales in Antarctica despite warnings from Western allies. Japan says it will kill about 1,000 whales. The country is using a loophole in the global moratorium that allows lethal research. Whale meat is a prized menu item in Japan. Activists report up to 80% of electronics recycled by Americans are then sent overseas to fuel a global trade that ultimately endangers both the environment and poverty-stricken workers. E-waste is often brokered by Chinese-owned companies to countries in Asia and Africa. Food banks and soup kitchens nationwide are reporting an unprecedented scarcity of donations. Many groups say they're canceling Thanksgiving dinners and food baskets, more working families in need than ever before. America's number two home improvement retailer, Lowe's, posting a 10% decline in quarterly earnings and lowering its annual forecast. Food company J.M. Smucker posting higher than expected quarterly profits, boosted by price hikes and the acquisition of Eagle Condensed Milk. Price of gas jumping 13 cents a gallon in the past 2 weeks, that's according to the Lundberg Survey. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow plunging 218 points to close at 12,958, NASDAQ down 44, S&P 500 down 25. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And he's back. riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And we're back. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 head-on. That translates to 877-443-2366. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And if you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's 304-658-3333. And because the show started a little oddly this evening, about 12 minutes late, this particular show is going to run till about 12 minutes after. So we're going to run till about 11:12. It makes Bob's clocks work better for mixing in streams. I'm sure there's a long technical explanation for it, but I don't know what it is. But anyway, we've got 12 minutes on the other side of 11 that we're going to be with you. Then I imagine we're going to go to a Cup of Joe replay, and then we'll join our friend John Fox live at midnight. And let's see, where were we? Yes, we'll have D.C. LaRue. I'll work it out with him tomorrow. We'll have him back Wednesday evening. I'd like him to be with us to introduce the tracks, because it means so much more when the artist is able to tell you the ins and outs and details as opposed to just me introducing them, because I don't know all of those details. Our friend Glenn Rivera probably knows a lot more of them than I do, and I do depend on Glenn's input for this. We'll also try to come up with all of the tracks for the Key Dance collection that he mentioned earlier, because that is one of his favorites. And I probably have some of them here, but just don't realize that they go with Key Dance. We are going to run two of his tracks with his permission, without him to introduce them. One, I think the first one that we'll run is called Indiscreet. Now, Indiscreet is the one that rapper Grandmaster Flash. Now, if you're curious about rapper Grandmaster Flash, you can go to YouTube and just type in Grandmaster Flash. Grandmaster is one word. To see some of his music, it is what they call old school rap music. And he is quoted as saying, after hearing Indiscreet, that it was the first hip-hop break he had ever heard, and that it was the start of all hip-hop and rap beats to come. Now, that was in 1976. Clearly, D.C. LaRue was ahead of his time. So to give you a clue about that, let's go ahead and run the track called Indiscreet by D.C. LaRue. We'll be right back.
there you have Indiscreet, and that was the track that apparently there was a 12-inch version that had a extremely long break in it that was the beginning of all hip-hop beats to come. We are, in fact, going to be running Forces of the Night in just a few minutes. Now, that is a 20-minute track. It's actually five MP3s or five tracks blended together, which I've assembled the MP3s back into the continuous mix. And I think it's fabulous. Just love it. Now, I think DC was a little bit disappointed with it because of the fact some of the people that were there recording it insisted on doing some of their own things, so he hears it differently in his head. Nonetheless, I think you'll really enjoy it. But before we do that, I would like to tell you this story about the Fundies versus Microsoft. Now, this was one that came out just recently. I believe on the 16th. What is the? Yeah, just a few days ago, and I didn't get a chance to cover it with you. And I do want to fit this story in tonight, and then we'll do the track. I don't know what makes me madder about this story. The fact that this pastor is beating up Little Billy, and as you know, Little Billy and Microsoft are two of my favorite people. Now, I know there are people who hate Microsoft. I'm just not one of them. I have been living on the Microsoft side of the fence for so long, I don't know any other way. I'm sure there are other ways, but nonetheless, Microsoft and Little Billy are dear friends of mine. But not only is he beating up Microsoft, he's going after the LGBT folks. I mean, you couldn't pick a guy that I could hate more. I really don't think if you searched the world over, you could find a guy that would tick me off more than the Reverend Ken Hutchison. Now, he's a former Dallas Cowboys linebacker with all the pats on the butt and all the stuff that they do. And at this point, he heads the Antioch Bible Church. Sounds like a little rural church in the South, but it's in Redmond, Washington. It's the home of Microsoft. And you see, the little church started with just 15 people back in 1984. It was a Bible study class. And he reinvented it and reinvented it. At this point in time, the Antioch Baptist Church has about 3,500 folks that attend their services, and Mr. Hutchison is a very powerful figure in the Christian movement, at least in his eyes. I think you'll hear a little bit later in the story the delusions of grandeur. He actually went, now there's audio of this, but the audio's a little bit dull. He says all this stuff, but I'll just tell you about it. There's no point playing the audio. It's a little bit flat sounding. He walks into he comes cruising into a Microsoft executive shareholders meeting last week. And he gets up there and he says that he is their worst nightmare if they continue to defy him. Now, can you imagine the nerve of telling one of the most profitable worldwide companies with hundreds of thousands of employees, billions of dollars of income, and who provide operating systems and software to, you know, half the planet, that he is their worst nightmare. The ego, if they continue to defy him. His church emphasizes racial diversity, but it also emphasizes a strict moral code, and it advocates a biblical stance against DIVORCE and homosexuality. Yes, it does. Mr. Hutchison's 55, and he's asking millions of evangelical activists, as well as Orthodox Jews and other allies. Now, here's the great part. You can't make this up. To buy up Microsoft shares and demand a return to traditional values. Yes, this man with these Lord have mercy. There's not enough fundies in the planet to buy Microsoft. I'm sorry. Bob is pointing out in production chat that I was raised in the gay bar where we ran Microsoft Windows for Warehouses, which was a very early version of their network. Software 3.11, Windows for Workgroups, I think it was called, or something, I've forgotten. It's been a while. Or networkable Windows, it worked, but that's all you can say about it. And so anyway, Microsoft, he declares, will just be the first company targeted in an escalation of the culture wars between evangelicals and corporate America. He says there are 256 Fortune 500 companies. alone, pouring millions upon millions of dollars into pushing the homosexual agenda. Oh, if I could only see 30,000 of it, that'd cover my wardrobe, the new video, the backdrops, the palm trees, everything. But apparently these 256 Fortune 500s are pouring millions upon millions into pushing the homosexuals. He says to Microsoft in front of God and everybody standing up there at the little podium where the shareholders, not that he's a shareholder yet, but Lottie in main chat is saying he still has his copy of Windows 3.11. I read that whole book, Lottie. It was huge, a big white book about, anyway, it's a long story. He says he considers himself a warrior for Christ. He says, Microsoft, don't scare me. That's a direct quote. Microsoft, don't scare me. I got God with me. I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh at his faith. I'm laughing at the very absurdity of it all. He said, and this is what he said to Microsoft in front of all the shareholders, I told them that you need to work with me or we'll put firestorms on you like you've never seen in your life, because I'm your worst nightmare. I'm a black man with a religious cause and a whole host of powerful white people behind me. Well, let me just ask you a question, Ken Hutchison. Did those white folks behind you give you your 40 acres and a mule, or did you get screwed that time too? Give me a break. Mr. Hutchison's office is decorated. Now, you got to love this. You can't make it up. Hutchison's office is decorated with heads of deer and elk and buffalo. Then this is a direct quote. When I run into animals, I kill them, and I bring them home and eat them. Okay, so this man runs into animals, and he kills them, and he brings them home, but it eats them, doesn't understand doob about operating systems or bootstrapping or master boot records or anything. He has no freaking clue. Okay, now here's where it gets really deep. This man is... It is typical for the conservatives, absolutely typical. They're so wrapped up in their power trip. He says he's had invitations to the White House and signed pictures of himself now with George Bush. Now, is anyone here surprised that George Bush would pal up with a jackass like this? Nobody's surprised. I see no hands up. He says he has an ambitious plan, and he's signaling a new offensive into his two-year battle with Microsoft after it abandoned its neutral stance on gay rights legislation. See, there was an outcry a while back, and Microsoft backed down on some, like, gay benefits in the company, LGBT benefits, and then Microsoft said, poo on this, and they reinstated them all. And he said he secretly helped to negotiate those cutbacks of the rights, and now he's just absolutely outraged because the gay employees intervened. He says that Microsoft is trying to become a political player in Washington State, which is where, of course, all this is happening. He says the company's trying to impose its sinful ways on others. And then you got to love this. Microsoft stepped out of their four walls and into my world. So that gives me the right to step out of my world into theirs. Honey, you're going to have to write a big fat check. I mean, it's going to take more than all the little old blue-haired ladies' Social Security checks to make a dent in Microsoft. But, you know, yeah, ignorance is bliss. He says they tried to turn their policy into state policy, making their policy something I had to submit to. And I love this word. And my playbook, how dare him refer to it as a playbook? My playbook is the Bible. His playbook. What color is the sky in his world? As if it were a game. Tells me you don't submit to sin. Now, Microsoft has what? 79,000 employees in 102 countries, annual revenues of more than $50 billion. And Hutchison says it's David and Goliath, that David and Goliath could bring the giant down, and he's going to call on the Christian foot soldiers to all buy Microsoft stock, and they're going to win. He says, I don't care how big Microsoft is. They're nothing but a feather in the wind of God. Here we go. America basically started with the Tea Party, and Goliath got taken down by David, who believed in the same cause I believe in. I'm going to go after the new Goliath with one little rock called a share, and I'm going to make him tremble before we get to it. In the video of Microsoft, they don't laugh at him. They just say, you know, they're very professional. Thank you for for your comments and your thoughts, sir, and good evening to you. Nobody went nuts or said anything, you know, bad to him. They were, I'm sure, horrified. But in their little corporate how to handle anything in a meeting training, they no doubt know how to handle some sort of a reverted dinosaur reptilian brain like the Reverend Ken Hutchison. The shareholders meeting, Brad Smith, Microsoft's general counsel, said it was up to the shareholders to continue their longstanding support of Microsoft's diversity policy, which includes an internal affinity employee group called GLEAM, G-L-E-A-M. It stands for Gay and Lesbian Employees at Microsoft. I'm sure that the gay and lesbian employees made Vista as beautiful as it is, which is a little much, guys. It could have been a lot less pretty and taken up a lot less CPU or horsepower. But nonetheless, you got to admit, it's freaking stunning. Anyway, Mr. Hutchison grew up in segregated Alabama. Now, you'd think that the man would get it. But he grew up in segregated Alabama and played football to, quote, hurt whites. Well, he was a little bigot. He just grew up to be a big bigot. You know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. Says he grew up to hurt whites, and he became a Christian and believes homosexuality is a sin rather than a biological thing. He rejects comparisons between black civil rights movements and the call for the gay rights. Now, here it comes. You know it's coming. How many homosexuals have you ever seen ride in the back of a bus? Well, he says he hasn't seen one. Hell, I've seen plenty. Not in the way he means, of course, but apparently hasn't been on the same bus routes I've been on. He says, I've never seen an ex-black. Never seen an ex-black. Mr. Hutchison, let me remind you of Michael Jackson. He says, I've seen ex-gays, and we minister to them every day, liar. And we talked to them about getting out of sin. And by the way, there's a little bit of an update to that. Let me check my time. Yeah, everything's cool. He is telling people, this is part of the ego bit, that he has been appointed the White House Special Envoy for Adoption, Family Values, and Religious Freedom and Medical Relief. Now, that's a mouthful. Special Envoy for Adoption. And he was appointed by the House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. Now, this is the Special Envoy for Adoption, Family Values, Religious Freedom. They probably just told him that to get him the hell out of there. But, of course, the White House is falling all over their face denying it. They're saying our faith-based and community initiatives did not give him the title Special Envoy for Adoptions, Family Values, and Religious Freedom and Belief. And he's saying he has tapes to prove it. Let me tell you something, sir. I don't care how many tapes you say you've got. If the White House says you're... just open the mail, smell the coffee. The White House says you're through, you're through. Doesn't matter what they told you. Anyway, he was also involved in that huge workman on the walls, or actually watchman on the walls thing that happened where all the Latvians, he went to Latvia actually to speak at that New Generation Church. Remember I did a report on that a while back, and then they did that thing in, Sacramento, I believe. He said, when he addressed them in Latvia through the translator, I come to you representing the White House, Hutchison said. Now, if he did say that, it is a federal crime for him to say that he represents the United States government in any capacity when he doesn't. Of course, he will not be charged with that. Bob in production is saying that he's secretly under contract with Apple. Oh, that's rich. That is rich. And then he says he considers himself a warrior for Christ. And again, he says, Microsoft, don't scare me. I got God with me, and God's on my side. You know, how many genocides and how many deaths have begun with the words, God's on my side? And again, he quotes himself as saying, I'm a black man with a righteous cause and a whole host of powerful white people behind me. And again, sir, I ask you about your 40 acres and the mule. So that's my opinion, and for what it's worth. But, you know, then again, I'm that way. This is the homosexual agenda on steroids, and you just got a piece of it. So right now we're going to run what I consider to be my absolutely favorite track that I've heard from D.C. LaRue. It's fabulous. It's actually four MP3 tracks that were a continuous track on the LP, and I've edited them back together so that they play as a continuous whole. The second portion of it is when the Latin stuff kicks in, which I think is fabulous. And the whole thing's just amazing to me. Runs 19 minutes, but nonetheless, I just don't care. I wouldn't care if it ran 2 hours. It's too good to pass up. There's time for us to go ahead and run that, and then we'll go. So shortly after that, we'll go to the close out for the show. But we're going to run the track by D.C. LaRue called "Forces of the Night."
Capture the sun. baby, run with your baby. I could tell from the signs and the stormy weather. But the last time that I saw her, she came up to me and said,
ah.
And she said,
you want to have a me?
And she said, I could tell from